We're talking about the scientific community's race to discover a so-called one-shot super vaccine against COVID. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Bloomberg News has reported that hundreds of vaccine researchers around the globe are working on this effort, and it may be closer than we think. Would you take a universal coronavirus vaccine? Are you concerned that there will be booster fatigue, that people who get the COVID vaccine series will not follow up with additional shots? 800-642-1234. Dr. Kevan Majerid is founding director of the Emerging Infectious Diseases Branch at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. Dr. Majerid, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on.
Good morning. We also have Robert Langreth, who is a health and science reporter for Bloomberg News. Bob, welcome to you.
Great to be here.
Good morning, Bob. Let's start with you. We want it all. We want a universal vaccine offering broad, long-term protection so we're not waylaid by every variant that comes our way. You have looked at the science around the world on this. In broad strokes, where is it right now?
Well, what we found when we did this story, you know, was very, very interesting. So basically, there's a number of teams around the world, including Dr. Majerid's team, and they are, you know, looking at preliminarily, you know, at the possibility of making a broader acting vaccine, one that we wouldn't have to chase after every variant with a new booster, and one that would potentially expand protection to a range of coronaviruses eventually. And what they're finding, and this is preliminary research, but it's very promising in animal studies, what they're finding is it may be possible to create a vaccine, you know, that induces protection against, you know, multiple coronaviruses that aren't included in the vaccine. And there's been repeated experiments showing that this may be possible. Now, this is all mostly, with a few exceptions, including Dr. Majerid's vaccine, animal experiments, and early stage experiments. So there's still, we still have a lot more to do, you know, but scientists that we talk to are increasingly saying is this may be possible. And it's something we should put, you know, the country and the world should put a huge effort into, because we've had three different coronaviruses hit humans in the last 20 years. First, there was SARS in 2003, then there was Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, that was in 2012, and now COVID-19. So there's almost certain to be another one, in addition to the variants we keep getting for COVID-19. So this, a lot of top scientists think this should be a top priority project to get going and see if we can make it happen.
Dr. Majerid, what is your team working on in this pursuit? And what are you in particular looking at? Because there are different avenues, different approaches to get to a one-shot super vaccine.
Yeah, definitely. There are many different strategies to develop broadly acting vaccines. We shy away from using the term universal at this point, just because we first need, I think, most importantly, a pan SARS-CoV-2 vaccine to cover all the variants. And then we can broaden out from there and try to tackle all the SARS-like viruses, the ones that caused the epidemic in 2002, 2003, and then the most recent one, and a number of other related viruses that we see in bat populations that may make another jump into humans. And so from day one, when the sequence is published for SARS-CoV-2, in our program, we started working on a vaccine that was targeting this particular virus. But knowing how viruses evolve, we wanted to develop a platform that would be broadly addressing the evolution of new strains of this virus and then covering other coronavirus species as well. And we do that by putting different parts of the most important part of the virus, the spike protein that is kind of the basis for all of the COVID vaccines. We put mix and match different spike proteins from different coronaviruses onto a single particle. That makes the manufacturing easier. It also makes it easier for the immune response to develop a broad range of antibodies against multiple coronaviruses, because it's seeing all those different components or parts of different coronaviruses in the same small space in sort of a nanometer scale. And that's why we call it a nanoparticle, we have one nanoparticle approach. There are other groups that have other nanoparticle approaches, but that is one of the, I think, pillars of the global effort, is using nanoparticles and the ability to kind of mix and match different parts of coronaviruses so that you can get closer and closer to what eventually we hope to be a universal vaccine.
Diversifying, if you will. We're talking with Dr. Kayvon Majerid, founding director of the Emerging Infectious Diseases Branch at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. Bob Langreth with us, health and science reporter for Bloomberg News. And you can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Dr. Majerid, I've been really wanting to ask you this because you were part of Operation Warp Speed, the big public-private program that helped companies manufacture COVID vaccines as fast as possible. Do you think that this all-hands-on-deck approach is needed here to create a pan-coronavirus vaccine to develop the next generation of vaccine technology?
I definitely think that we're going to need something similar to what we have developed in the context of the federal effort to combat this pandemic, that in some version needs to be recapitulated for the development of broadly acting coronavirus vaccines, and honestly, for vaccines against other virus families as well. We saw that it was critical to the speed of the development for the federal government to step in and work with the private sector to get these vaccines out as quickly as possible, as safely as possible as well. Bob, I think, makes a very good point in his article that one of the key challenges to getting to a universal vaccine or a broadly protective coronavirus vaccine is not in the science, but is perhaps more in the investments. The incentives aren't necessarily there for pharmaceutical companies to develop these vaccines from an early stage. That's why we need the global community of scientists to be supported in getting the science to a point where industry feels there is enough de-risking for them to take over and take these into further development.
Bob, what would you say there? You know, Operation Warp Speed, $10 billion. What is the scale for you to see where all these scientists working in all their separate labs around the world would be able to come together and work together and make sure that the technology transfer is there and that the pharmaceuticals are on the same page? And how does that all work?
Yeah, so that's one of the big questions, you know, is, you know, who is going to fund this to get it to the next stage? You know, not in terms of there's funding right now for kind of the research stage, like the National Institutes of Health is putting, I think, $36 million. And there's a group, a nonprofit group funded, and also called CEPI, Center for Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, is going to put in $200 million. But to really, you know, if this continues to be promising, you know, in the early animal studies and the early phase one human clinical studies, if this continues to be promising, you know, someone's going to need to put in like big bucks, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, that's per project. You know, there's many different iterations and versions, strategies that people are trying out, as Dr. Majerid said. And so someone's going to need to put in hundreds of million dollars kind of per strategy to, you know, work up the manufacturing to large scale and to do large scale human testing. And it's not right now clear, you know, who's going to come up, you know, with that money. And one of the things that we point out, you know, in the story, you know, is that the, you know, the incumbents, you know, Moderna and Pfizer, they have kind of a good business model going right now, kind of with booster shots. And that they're making, you know, both the companies combined are making tens of billions of dollars this year and next, you know, selling their shots and selling booster shots. And they have, you know, a way that they can, you know, it's fairly straightforward for them to make a Omicron booster shot or whatever the next variant booster shot is. That's something they know how to do, and they know they'll be able to sell that. Whereas a pan-coronavirus vaccine or a broadly acting vaccine, you know, that's riskier and that's more uncertain, and that's going to take a lot of money to prove, you know, whether it works or not and what the best strategy is. And so who's going to put up that money? Who's going to have the incentive to do that? Mm. And it's just not clear right now, you know, who's going to do that and how that's going to work. And that's kind of, you know, one of the big questions that remains if this stays promising. Who's going to step up to move it to that next stage?
Health journalist Bob Langreth with us from Bloomberg News. Dr. Kayvon Majerid leads the Army's development of a COVID vaccine based at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. Your questions as well. Are you worried about new variants? How important is getting a booster dose? How concerned are you about reinfections and breakthrough infections? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're exploring how scientists around the world are racing to discover a variant-proof pan-coronavirus vaccine. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President of Moderna told Reuters earlier this month that they could have a booster shot targeting the Omicron variant ready for federal regulators as soon as March. And the company announced in a news release last month that they're testing what are called multivalent boosters that could target common mutations across multiple variants. What questions do you have about pharmaceutical development, how public health responds with the best vaccine regimen? 800-642-1234. Dr. Kayvon Majerid leads the Emerging Infectious Diseases branch at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, was a member of Operation Warp Speed. Bob Langreth here, science and health reporter for Bloomberg News. They stay with us. I want to look at flu here for a moment. Every year we get a flu shot. Dr. Majerid, every year vaccine makers try to find the right formulation of the flu vaccine that will get, you know, match the circulating flu viruses, give us the best coverage. What can we learn from this reactive approach?
I think we can learn a lot from the lessons that we've learned, both successes and some failures in the development of broadly acting vaccines against other viruses like flu. There's a quote at the end of Bob's article from a colleague of mine in the scientific community, Linfa Wang, where he talks about this being what we're trying to do is preemptive vaccine development, which is kind of a interesting way of putting it, because vaccines are inherently supposed to be preemptive and preventive, yet we keep making these vaccines in a reactive way after the viruses emerged and caused a problem. There's been a growing interest over the past decade, two decades, in developing a universal flu vaccine. That has informed a lot of our current efforts in trying to develop these broadly acting coronavirus vaccines. But we also have to understand that flu is not coronavirus, mm-hmm. and vice versa. And we have to tailor our approaches to that particular properties of this particular virus and its family. We can take some lessons from flu, but in some ways, coronaviruses may be developing a broadly acting vaccine may be more achievable, given that we don't have as, if you look at sort of the family tree of flu and compared to coronaviruses, it's a lot smaller for the family tree of coronaviruses, so it's a lot more achievable to get a universal vaccine.
Bob, you know, there's this fear that we're always going to be chasing a virus that is, in turn, chasing us. Does your reporting kind of bear this out, that there is that tension between trying to find the next vaccine versus how could we stop this chain reaction?
Well, exactly. And that's sort of what we wrote a little bit. We had a little bit of the history of the development of the flu vaccine, because it was very interesting, because in the 40s, when it was first developed in the U.S. By a doctor at the University of Michigan, Thomas Francis, and his young protege, Jonas Salk, they thought, you know, they were very optimistic about the flu vaccine results. And some of the early trials, you know, were very promising. I think one of them had like an 88% efficacy. And it was And they knew the flu could mutate fast and the new strains could come out, but they thought that'd be kind of very achievable and handleable back in the 1940s. It took really decades to get better lab testing until, you know, the scientific community realized at large that the efficacy of the flu vaccine, you know, was real world effectiveness quite mediocre, only like maybe 40-50%. And that's a large part to do with the way that the strains rapidly mutate and change from year to year. And the point of some of the researchers I talked to, the National Institutes of Health, the point that they made about this is, hey, let's not wait so long to start, you know, like we did with the flu, to start working on a universal vaccine with coronavirus. Let's start, you know, Manhattan style project for that, for a broadly acting coronavirus vaccine right now. And just not wait and assume that the vaccines we have now are going to be good enough long term. We really need to make this effort right now.
Let's bring on a caller. Paul is joining us from Arcadia with a question. Paul, hi.
Good morning. Question for the doctor. Maybe this is thinking a little too far down the line, but thinking about study designs for a universal vaccine, now that so many people have already received multiple vaccinations, either the three or worldwide others, how are we going to find a sort of a pure population that hasn't received anything to see if a universal will be effective? I mean, we've convinced those who are going to get vaccines, and I appreciate those folks. There's a lot of folks that aren't going to touch it. How is that going to affect the study going forward?
Thank you, Paul. Dr. Majerid.
Paul, thanks for that question. It's an excellent one, and one that we have been thinking about, really not just for universal vaccines, but for next iterations of COVID vaccines. And it's something that is actually not new to our strategies, because it's not just that the world is now primed against a highly pathogenic coronavirus like SARS-CoV-2, but we've all been primed against coronaviruses throughout our lives. The milder coronaviruses that we know about, four of those seven that we know are in human populations, account for about a third of the common colds that are circulating. So we have to think about essentially a vaccine that's going to be effective in a population that's been already primed against multiple different coronaviruses. And in some ways that might make our task easier if you're starting with some level of immunity, and we just sort of direct that immunity to be a little bit broader than what you have naturally.
Paul, thanks for the question. We're talking with Dr. Kayvon Majerid, who is founding director of the Emerging Infectious Diseases Branch at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. Bob Langreth here, science reporter for Bloomberg News. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. I want to circle back, Bob, to the drug makers, Pfizer, Moderna, figuring out their next steps with variants and how to approach the booster vaccines. And, you know, in that tact, it seems that they have a clear mission, if you will, to be able to combat the next Omicron, the next variant. Where do then they work with the government, or how does that seem to work with their labs as you look more broadly at putting together a pan-coronavirus vaccine?
So right now, as you said, both of the companies, and we did another story on this a couple of days ago, both companies are working on an Omicron-specific variant vaccine, and they're talking, it's interesting, they have Pfizer's a manufacturing plant about 20 miles north of Boston, Moderna's plant is about 20 miles south of Boston, so there's two competing, you know, plants racing to make, you know, doses of an Omicron-specific variant vaccine that could be ready, you know, in the March timeframe, depending on, you know, what the FDA requires. Of course, the problem with variant booster shots, if these variants keep coming, you know, as one of the researchers said in our story, you know, there's going to be more variants until we run out of Greek letters, potentially. Hmm. So you kind of want to try to eventually get ahead of things. It's hard to keep up with a fast-changing respiratory virus if you're being reactive. And so, yeah, so the question is, you know, how will they work with the government or others in a more broadly acting vaccine? You know, it's not clear yet how that would happen. Neither company is heavily invested in, you know, long-term broadly acting vaccines. What they are working on is you know, combination vaccines would take a booster shot against variant X versus a booster shot against variant Y, like a combination Delta Beta booster shot, or maybe in the future, a combination Delta Omicron booster shot. Moderna in particular has talked about that. But in terms, you know, what they say is that the science of broadly acting, one series vaccine that would eliminate the need for boosters. What they told me is that they thought the science is very, very early and they needed to wait for it to mature more. And Moderna in particular said that, hey, once the science is ready, we'd be happy to invest, but it's just not ready yet. So that's kind of their stance right now. And someone's going to need to put in the investment, big time investment, probably a government, to get the science to that point where everyone sees the path forward, or to prove it doesn't work, and that's very unclear where that investment is going to come from right now.
Well, we will be watching. Bob Langreth, thank you for sharing your reporting with us, health and science reporter for Bloomberg News. Dr. Kayvon Majerid, founding director of the Emerging Infectious Diseases Branch at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. Stay with us. News update is next here on the Ideas Network.